And tonight on Coast to Coast, we will talk about God and the afterlife. Dr. Jeffrey Long back with us on Coast to Coast, and I'm looking forward to this when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Dr. Jeffrey Long is a leading near-death experience researcher and New York Times bestselling author. His latest work, God and the Afterlife. He's got a couple websites devoted to experiences related to NDEs, After Death Communication Research Foundation, which is all linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and the Out-of-Body Experience Research Foundation as well. Family of Websites is the largest publicly accessible collection of human experiences of this type. And welcome back, Dr. Jeffrey Long. Doctor, always a pleasure.
George, it's always a pleasure to be here. Got an exciting show coming up.
You give us the greatest information about this subject matter than just about anybody I've ever talked to.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's taken many years to learn all that. And looking forward to sharing it. We've got some groundbreaking new things to talk about tonight.
You've been a practicing radiation oncologist. How in God's name, and we're going to be talking about God a lot tonight, how did you switch into this field?
That's a great question. Several decades ago, I just became aware of near-death experience, and I think like so many other people, I was immediately fascinated, thinking, gosh, you know, we all wonder what happens when we die, and here over and over in these near-death experiences seems to be a suggestion as to what happens when we die. It talks about an afterlife, and talks about a blissful, wonderful afterlife that's for all of us, and that got me started all those years ago, setting up my investigations, asking thousands of people. We now have over 4,000 near-death experiences.
Jeez.
And as my research continued, I just started drilling down on the content of near-death experiences and didn't have to drill too far before we realized we had an amazing concept where near-death experiencers were consistently describing encounters or awareness with God during their experiences.
Jeff, did you ever have any doubts about the existence of the afterlife in the past?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when I started doing this website for research, I was, if you will, a leading skeptic.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't going to rely on the many scientific studies that have been published and some of the excellent books out there and even some of the excellent radio shows on near-death experience. No, I wanted to go to the original source of material, that being people that had these near-death experiences personally sharing their remarkable stories with me and with a very carefully developed scientific survey so that I could not only hear from a large number of people that had these experiences, but know in great detail what happened and make up my own mind about the reality. Well, that was a long time ago, and very, very quickly I realized one thing's for sure, these near-death experiences are for real.
What do you think is happening with people that, one, we're getting so many near-death experiences? Is it because of our ability to, you know, resuscitate people, bring them back from the dead? What's causing this much higher number now?
Great question. I think there's two things going on. First of all, there's no doubt our modern resuscitation techniques are bringing back from the brink of death those who otherwise would have permanently died even a few years ago. Medicine moves forward on a variety of fronts, and resuscitation, very gratifyingly, is bringing more people back to life than ever. Now, I think the second important thing is that near-death experiences are no longer considered to be fringe or out of the ordinary. These are now recognized as relatively common, ordinary human experiences, and now, at the current time, we have literally hundreds of scientific scholarly articles written in some of the world's leading medical and scientific journals. So near-death experiences are, if you will, mainstream. People recognize them and respect them, and I think that's encouraging more people now than ever to come forward and share their own personal experiences.
I love the OBE stories, the near-death experience stories, where the person is floating above their body in an emergency room. The guy's dead, basically, and he comes back and he tells doctors and nurses what they were saying about him.
You know, I love those stories too. And actually, George, I look at it from a medical perspective. Very often, in fact, typically people having a near-death experience are emotionally withdrawn. They're kind of no pain, kind of wondering what all the fuss is, as we, the medical staff, desperately try to bring them back to life. So fascinating stories that we hear over and over.
Dr. Long, is there some kind of common denominator with people who are dead? I mean, do they all say, I see this light, I'm visited by my dearly departed friends and family? Is there something common here?
Well, no two near-death experiences are alike, but by the time I've studied thousands and what many other, well, basically all other near-death experience researchers are seeing is that there's a typical pattern of elements. Very often, as we were talking about, there's that out-of-body experience. Of course, first there's that life-threatening event. In my series, these people are so physically compromised, they're generally unconscious or even clinically dead with no heartbeat. Now, this should be a time when no conscious experience is possible, and yet they have the elements of a near-death experience. They may have that out-of-body experience, as you were saying. Consciousness typically goes above the body where they can see ongoing earthly events. They may pass into or through a tunnel. They often encounter a mystical, beautiful, unearthly light at the end of that tunnel. In that unearthly realm, they may encounter deceased relatives or friends. Deceased pets are there, too. They typically have a very altered sense of space or time at that point, typically saying time does not exist. They may see all or part of their prior life in a life review. There may be unearthly, beautifully otherworldly, which I think is aptly called heavenly realms. Very interestingly, there's often a decision at the end of their experience about returning to their body or not. Ultimately, when they do return to their earthly body and their earthly life and recover from what nearly killed them, they've got their near-death experience to share.
In this situation that they are in, are they glad that they've come back, or would they have preferred to have stayed?
The substantial majority, shockingly, would have preferred to stay in these unearthly heavenly realms. That tells you how incredibly engaging these realms are. They feel overwhelming senses of peace and love. Over and over, they describe these unearthly heavenly realms as understanding when they're there that that's their real home and their earthly life is really just a transient visit. But the substantial majority of near-death experiencers, when they return to their earthly life, often have a period of emotional adjustment. They may be anger, they may be sad that they left that overwhelmingly blissful environment and returned back to the pain of recovering from what nearly killed them. And the often difficulties of our earthly lives.
Do they come back changed, though, in that are they a little more spiritual?
Oh, absolutely. That's called in scholarly research the after effects of near-death experience, and that's almost invariably observed. The after effects can result in profound, lasting changes in the person's values and attitudes. These after effects can include, very commonly, things such as an increased sense of awareness of the importance of love in their earthly life, increased ability to want to have stronger, better relationships, less materialistic, increased spiritual beliefs, almost invariably no longer fearing death, and very typically increased belief in the reality, of course, of an afterlife, they were there, and increased belief in God.
Are they angry with themselves, Jeffrey? Do they beat themselves up because of the way they lived?
Interestingly, most of the time not. Even those that have what's called a life review, where they see all or a portion of their prior life, they really come to, most of the time, to understand that it's a learning process, that they're not really judged by other beings that are around them during the life review. The life review seems to be something that they can need to think about to help live their life better. Now, that's not to say that their life reviews or being aware of their prior life experiences isn't difficult for them. It is. Sometimes they're just mortified at seeing their unloving actions during their prior life. But when they come back and have a chance to think about it, they really understand it's an opportunity to have a second chance to learn from what that happened during their near-death experience and to live their life more lovingly, more fully. And these are typically often very strongly changed people and changed for the better.
Well, with Dr. Jeffrey Long, his book, God in the Afterlife, Jeffrey, when people experience this feeling of death and they then come back, have any of them witnessed what we would call hell?
Yes. I have in my book the largest study of, if you will, hellish near-death experiences that's ever been reported. These are actually very uncommon experiences. Only about 1% of people that have truly hellish near-death experiences, more near-death experiences may be frightening, but the truly graphically hellish experiences, that's only about 1% of the time. Now, they're rare, but George, they are real near-death experiences, and in fact, some of the most frightening stuff that I've read in my life is not fiction books, but is the actual, real, personal experiences of these people that encountered those hellish realms.
Can you give us a story of something or how they went through something like this?
Well, again, no two experiences the same, but an example of this would be, and often it's in the initial part of their near-death experience, they may, right off the bat, they have their near-death experience is in a very different direction from, if you will, others. Sometimes instead of rising up over their body, they may feel their consciousness dropping down below their body. As time progresses, they're often in a dark realm. They may hear frightening sounds. There may be frightening sensations. They may feel fear. There may be odorous scents. There may be all those sort of bells and whistles, if you will, that go with hell. And then ultimately, they may end up in a truly graphic, hellish environment. There may be malevolent beings, threatening beings. Heat is typically described much more than cold. There can even be classic depictions of hell, including flames. I mean, this is a very, very unpleasant description, is what they describe.
Do they see Satan or the devil or anything like that?
The significant majority of the time, they see what they call demonic beings, you know, sort of distorted, ugly beings, and not really what they would call Satan's and Satan's self, although a few reports do describe that. And these, I mean, they can literally sense the evil of these malevolent beings.
Are they ever asked to stay?
Oh, it's expected they're going to stay. They're being told their life. I mean, they're in every way that these demonic beings can work with them, they're told, you know, you've stayed. This is going to be you for all of eternity. You know, you are going to be suffering here in torment with us, and it's ugly.
Do you find that those people, when they come back, change the most?
You know, there's a huge silver lining to these hellacious experiences, and that is that very often these people, when they come back, have those same positive life changes that people that had the more common, pleasant near-death experiences have. They come back and sometimes will realize that there were serious issues in their life and will admit there was no way that they could have confronted those issues in their life unless they had such a horrific experience. It certainly, as you can imagine, causes them to think about some things in their life that need to be changed, and very often these can be changed, loving people, and I think very positively, they no longer, as time goes on and they've learned from their experience and grown from their trip to hell, they come back realizing, hey, that's really not a long-term threat to me. I mean, they don't live the rest of their life feeling threatened by returning to that environment. They just simply say, it's what I had to go through. I'm a changed and much better person now. And I'd be pretty sure when they die again, if they were to have another near-death experience, they'll be back into those pleasant, blissful realms.
Let's assume for a moment with the near-death experience that the brain, deprived of oxygen, starts doing these bizarre things that people remember as almost dreams when they come back, when they're brought back, when they're resuscitated. Is that possible?
Oh, sure. Of course, virtually everybody that's having a life-threatening event is going to have their brain, as you say, deprived of oxygen. I mean, that's a typical pathway towards from being conscious towards having a life-threatening event, less blood flow to the brain towards unconsciousness. However, when you think about it, I guess as a doctor, I have a huge advantage because I've seen people deprived of oxygen to the brain. They don't have lucid, organized experiences. They have confused, confusional, hallucinatory experiences. And the less blood is flowing to the brain, the less oxygen their brain has, the more confused they get, the less conscious they become, and there's a gradual trend down toward complete unconsciousness. It's called hypoxia, is the medical term for that, and what you observe with people having hypoxia is nothing like the highly lucid, organized experiences of near-death experience so consistently observed among vast numbers of people around the world. Another good example of that is near-death experiences can occur under general anesthesia. Under general anesthesia, the heart can stop, and they still have the same typical near-death experiences as occur under all other circumstances. the fact that under that powerful blanket of sleep of anesthesia, you can still have a near-death experience really pretty much excludes the physical brain from being the etiology of near-death experiences. There's something else going on, and that something seems to be exactly what virtually all near-death experiencers believe, and that is a true journey to another realm of existence.
Jeffrey, what about the belief of spirituality by various religions? Does that have anything to do with it? I mean, do people who are Jewish and Christians and Muslims and Buddhists, do they all have different perspectives of the afterlife?
They sure do from the religious point of views. Of course, their belief about the afterlife can vary significantly. But that's another thing that makes near-death experiences so exciting. I've actually studied now 40, coming up on 50, non-Western near-death experiences. These are from cultures and religious and beliefs all around the world that are much, much different from our typical Judeo-Christian beliefs. And even in these very different religions, the near-death experiences they have are strikingly similar to typical Western near-death experiences. In fact, I recently been working with a near-death experience researcher in Iran who's got several dozen near-death experiences from over there, and both of us are kind of scratching our head going, wow, remarkably similar to what we know as being the typical pattern of Western near-death experiences.
It's remarkable work that you're doing. You know, Raymond Moody's doing it, you're doing it. How many others are doing this?
Well, there's actually dozens and dozens of us serious near-death experience researchers, again, writing hundreds of scholarly articles that have been published in a lot of different journals. It's fun. We enjoy it. It's a labor of love. And I think certainly talking to Raymond Moody, he's actually a personal friend of mine, as well as many of the other leading near-death experiencers, researchers. For us, it's life-changing. I mean, how can you be exposed to this profound message of love, peace, reassurance that our life is meaningful and purposeful, and that we all have an afterlife, a wonderful afterlife? I think it's really changed all of us and changed us for the better. It's as if those of us being near-death experience researchers seem to bring back a little piece of heaven into our own lives.
Jeffrey, what determines whether somebody is brought back from the afterlife or not? Is it the individual, his willpower, or, you know, is it the medical profession that brings them back?
You know, great question. I think it's both. I think physically it's the medical profession that does that. You know, now more than ever, people have the resuscitation techniques that are saving more lives than was ever possible. So you're not going to share a near-death experience if you don't recover from what nearly killed you. But interestingly, during near-death experiences, so often people have a choice about either returning to their earthly life or staying in that blissful, unearthly life. So I think to some significant degree, people that may die irreversibly and permanently, it's very possible that they had that choice and chose to stay in that heavenly realm.
Do they miss their loved ones? I mean, if I were in that situation, I'd miss my kids and everything else around this life.
I think they really do, and I think certainly anybody that dies permanently and irreversible, I mean, this is what they knew. They may have lived their earthly life years to decades. Their friends, family, loved ones span throughout a very important part of their life. So I don't have any doubt that they actually miss their loved ones. But don't forget, those that die irreversibly are in that, if you will, eternal, permanent existence in their real home. They know full well that our earthly life seems to be more of a bump along the road of their eternal existence. And they know full well that all their friends, family, loved ones, all that they knew during their earthly life, pets too, will be reunited with them one day in that heavenly realm.
We're with Dr. Jeffrey Long, the name of his book, God and the Afterlife. And, of course, what does God mean in his title? We're going to come back and talk with Jeffrey about that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Jeffrey Long with us, God in the Afterlife. Jeffrey, you set up a God study. Tell us about that.
Well, here's what happened in my most recent version of my survey on the website for people that had near-death experiences. I was astounded when the first 420 people responding to it answered a question that was, during your experience, did you encounter specific information or awareness that God or a supreme being exists? to my abject astonishment, 45.5%, 191, answered yes. That really got me to thinking. That is a higher percentage, 45.5% being aware of God. That's a higher percentage than people that described a tunnel experience, a life review, or encountering deceased loved ones. So I wanted to drill down on that and look at the times that near-death experiencers encountered God, and in their own word, they called it God. What were they talking about? What did they describe? That led to the ultimately to the book God and the Afterlife, because we found striking consistency in what near-death experiencers were talking about, and that's what got me very, very excited, and that's what ultimately led, of course, to the book and this show.
What did they talk about? How did they explain God?
That's an interesting point. When they encountered God, very often they said that God is beyond our earthly language constructs, and this seemed to be a being that was so beyond anything out in their earthly experience, so beyond anything that they thought God would be like, that sometimes it was one near-death experiencer said, it seems like all the words in the dictionary couldn't fully describe this being that they encountered. But when near-death experiencers encountered God, they had a fairly consistent pattern of elements that they described. Certainly one of the most common things that they were impressed with was this overwhelming, unearthly love of God that they encountered.
Did they meet God, or did they just feel God?
I included for my study both types. In other words, if they had an awareness of God, knew God was there, they had, a sense that God was in or around where they were. And again, we're typically talking about these unearthly, if you will, heavenly realms. But more common than an awareness of God were people that actually had an encounter with God, and actually they saw something that they came back, and that certainly after considering it and reflecting on it, what it might be, what not, they might not be, when they chose to share their near-death experience, they were generally quite convinced that this was indeed God. And I know what everyone's going to think. What did they see? The most common thing that they saw, of course, was light. God was variably described, but really not a huge surprise, George. In fact, many near-death experiencers became aware right during their near-death experience, right during their encounter with God, that God was actually choosing an appearance that was suited for them personally.
Do they hear a voice, or do they just sense something?
Well, as with other near-death experience descriptions, voice is a physical, earthly term that we're aware of. Communication in near-death experiences, and this included with God, was essentially always telepathic. There would be a few descriptions where God's seemed to have a sort of sound or a voice-like, but for the great majority of times, this so-called telepathic communication in near-death experiences isn't just a simple back-and-forth transmission of thoughts. It seems to be a complete transmission of ideas, concepts, the context of the information being shared, as well as associated feelings of and crystal clear, so that there can be no ambiguity or uncertainty about the communication. That's typical with near-death experiences, and perhaps especially so when near-death experiencers describe communication with God.
Jeffrey, were there any agnostics or atheists in your study, people who had died but they were non-believers prior to?
Absolutely, and that was an important part of my study. I was especially interested in the group that were atheists, and we asked that specifically their religious background at the time they had the near-death experience. We had a population of atheists, and that was what they knew their lack of belief was, and that's a survey question. Certainly atheists can encounter God, and by the way, that's a significant line of evidence for the reality of what they're encountering. I mean, an atheist would be, if you will, the last person on the last being on the planet they'd think they'd encounter would be God. And yet here, over and over again, were atheists sharing that they did indeed encounter God. And of course, they could no longer be atheists after encountering God. They knew from their own personal experience that there really was God, how profoundly God loving was to them. And interestingly, even though we have a small series of atheists that encountered God, essentially never, well, in fact, never, but by my research, did God ever judge the atheist? God never seems to confront them for what their beliefs were. They described that same enveloping love that essentially all other near-death experiencers did that encountered God.
How far did the other side did they go once they came back? Were they like believers big time?
Oh, yeah. Experiencing is believing. And that's true in near-death experiences more than about anywhere else. So when they came back, absolutely. They absolutely, completely got God. In fact, we ask a survey question, you know, what is their belief about God at the current time? And atheists, right along, that atheists at the time of their near-death experience, along with all other near-death experiencers, almost uniformly believe that God is definitely real. Again, and that's often a shift. We ask them what their belief in God was at the time of their experience, and then what their belief in was God when they shared their near-death experience, which is an average of about 20 years later. An overwhelming shift among those that encountered God, including atheists, almost uniformly believing God absolutely exists, again, based on their own personal experience.
Did any of them come back with a message from God?
Not really so much for the world. Interestingly, when God is encountered in a near-death experience, almost never does God give them, if you will, commandments. Thou shalt go do this vocation,
right,
or
right.
Thou shalt marry this person. The great, great majority of the time, when they get any information from God, it's along the lines of, your job is not yet complete. You have a mission to accomplish. You need to go back to your earthly life. So there's a lot of sort of general encouragement to go back to their life, but very, very uncommonly is there specific information about what that should be.
Did they come up with a definition of what God is?
And that's a good one. Of course, my question asked if they encountered God or a spiritual being,
yeah,
straight from the dictionary.
Like an angel,
but,
maybe?
Yeah, and I just opened the question that way just so that they could feel open about sharing whatever they encountered, and gosh, did they ever. There doesn't seem, in fact, near-death experiencers over and over would say that God is so profound, so beautiful, the lights around God, the profound positive emotions of love and peace they feel around God is just off the chart in terms of their earthly vocabulary. So God doesn't seem to be anything that they could really define or characterize other than in the context of what they observed.
You had said that God somehow may take shapes for these people so they could somewhat understand what's going on. But did any of them talk about God being human-like?
Yes. There's a number of descriptors of God being humanoid, maybe normal-sized, huge-sized.
Did they see a face?
Yeah, some of them see a face. They don't really go into detail other than using terms such as beautiful, glowing, radiant. So that's some of the descriptors that they use. But more often than not, God is not humanoid. It would be light, would be some undefined being, and yet they would really get a sense that entity, that is indeed God.
Would they talk about God being somewhat like the traditional Jesus that we all see?
Only a minority actually did. In fact, a very small minority. When they do see God in a humanoid appearance, I mean, the classic appearance would be God sitting on the throne with a long white beard and a flowing robe. That's rare. A great majority of people talk about God in other terms, you know, humanoid, but, you know, glowing, bigger, more beautiful, you know, more wonderful, a sense of radiating love 1,000 times 1,000. So it's really sort of, you know, as the near-death experiencers became aware of during their experiences, remarkably, God chose an appearance suited for them, meaning that's what they would, if you will, relate to, not be frightened by, and that seems to be the explanation that the near-death experiencers themselves have for why God appears differently to different people. We actually see that also with other beings that are encountered in near-death experiences.
What?
Very, very often they will take on variable appearances and let the near-death experiencers know that, and occasionally even choose.
What would you say would be the most dramatic thing, Jeffrey, that these people brought back with them after this experience?
Well, I think just the fact that they were so remarkably consistent in, you know, what God felt like, the profound sense that there really is a God. I mean, that right there is just off the chart in terms of importance. I think one of the things that was really significant to me was we talked about love being the most common descriptor of their experience of encountering God. Number two, very close number two to my considerable surprise, is that near-death experiencers described more than just a connection, but a true unity or oneness with God. That really surprised me because That's really not traditionally taught in a lot of religions. I mean, very often we in religions, at least what I'm familiar with, they emphasize our separation from God. We're not part of God. God's up there, we're down here. But to have people have a near-death experience and overwhelmingly, consistently come back as saying, no, we're all of us, unified, one with God. In fact, no near-death experiencer anywhere that I could recall described God as disconnected. That really surprised me. That really got me to thinking.
We're with Dr. Jeffrey Long, his book, God in the Afterlife. Jeffrey, what about people who have gone to the other side in this near-death experience in not-so-good ways, you know, suicide attempts and things like that? Are they punished?
No. The God that they encounter, I have yet to encounter a near-death experience where God harmed another being. I have yet to encounter a near-death experience where they were punished or sent to some unpleasant realm. What is astounding is God's overwhelming love and connection. I mean, the good news seems to be that God is accepting all of us for who we are and for what we are, even with our shortcomings. And near-death experiencers, and again, we have 277 that I studied. This is not a small number. Overwhelmingly, consistently saying that God is loving them, knows them completely, who they are, what they are, how they live their earthly life, and yet there is God loving them. They feel great peace with God, and God seemingly to accepting them. And even of those, and you mentioned suicide, even those that have committed suicide, it's fairly certainly they come after their experience to understand that their suicide was wrong, and in fact very wrong, that our earthly life is meaningful and significant. And it was a huge mistake to try to end their life early. But while they're with God, it seems to be much more critical for God to convey their overwhelming love and support for the near-death experiencer.
Those who have died and don't come back to talk about this experience and give us the information that we want, what do you think is happening to them, you know, generally now?
I mean, those that die irreversibly, are you saying what's their experience?
Yeah, what's happening to them at this point? What are they going through?
And that's interesting because in my latest book, I actually find a hint as to what happens to people that die irreversibly. Of course, they're not going to come back to earthly life to share their tale, but what happens to them? Well, I think a hint comes in what's called shared near-death experiences. This is two or more people that have a near-death experience at the same time, a life-threatening event at the same time, and remarkably, they become aware of each other during their experiences. They can see each other, they can communicate with each other, and very often one person will return to their earthly life and one person will go on and not return to their earthly life and irreversibly die. But these direct observations of other beings that seem to be on their transitionary path towards a permanent death and a trip towards these unearthly heavenly realms, is some pretty strong evidence that what we're observing in near-death experiences actually is that this is the initial experience of those that irreversibly die.
When you go, Jeffrey, do you think that you are now at a point where you expect, you know what you're going to go through?
You know, even some years ago, I would have said I wasn't sure or I didn't know, but the evidence to me in my research is so overwhelmingly strong that based on evidence, I believe I'm going to go down the path that has been shared by thousands of near-death experiencers. So I firmly believe that this is going to be what my journey will be as well. It's going to be the elements that are so familiar, tunnel, light, may well be there. But I do know my ultimate destination is going to be in that realm that near-death experiencers call their real home, that being an afterlife where I'll be with those that have died before me. Actually, looking forward to that, I certainly value and treasure my earthly life and would never cut it short. But I do know at the end of the road, the end of my earthly life, there is that blissful paradise that I hear so consistently in near-death experiences. And I find that to be profoundly encouraging news, not only for me, but I think for every single person in the world.
One of the answers that we, of course, all try to seek is, why are we here? Who are we? How did this all start? Do you think by truly understanding the afterlife, that we get a better perspective of what life is all about, how it was formed, how the universe was formed, what this is all about?
Yeah, interesting question. We've had some scant, rare near-death experiencers report, if you will, a distant, a memory, sort of plugging into a memory of when the universe was formed, a Big Bang. I wish I had enough of those types of experiences that I could say I have evidence, but certainly at least I can say that it's anecdotal. So consistent with a Big Bang is how the universe seems to be formed. But getting back to the meaning and purpose of life, in my most recent survey, that's a burning question on my mind too. So I asked 420 near-death experiencers directly, during your experience, did you encounter any specific information or awareness regarding our earthly life's meaning or purpose? 36% of the near-death experiencers answered yes, and what they had to say after that was remarkable. A couple of the biggest take-home lessons was absolutely, what we're doing here, every action of our life is important. In other words, our earthly lives really, really are meaningful, even though I think we all doubt that at some point or another. And as near-death experiencers return, over and over they feel, as far as drilling down on what do you mean, what is things that we should be thinking about for meaning and purpose of our life, the number one word by far that comes up is love.
Really?
Absolutely.
Interesting take.
Yeah, and that seems to be, I mean, and is that really a surprise, though? I mean, when they encounter God, the number one descriptor, the number one thing they say about God is that literally God is love. So understanding that, I guess it wasn't nearly as surprising when I found that indeed when they get information about our earthly meaning and purpose of our lives, that love should not stick out as being perhaps the one thing that we need to think about most.
Do you think somebody who is without love misses this, is void of truly understanding life after death, and truly is not a happy person?
Well, no doubt someone without love is not going to be a happy person. I think we've all met a few people like that in our
lives.
Yeah,
we have. feel sorry for them.
And you do. I think those that lack love or lack the ability to feel or express love, I think they're really, from my research, again, it's purely based on evidence now, they seem to be missing out on an important part of humanity, that critical part of having that empathy, that compassion for others, that willingness, ability to reach out to others and make other people's lives better, to make the world better. I think that seems to be such an important part of what we ought to be doing, that if you lack that capacity, you can certainly hope that as their life goes on, that they will develop that capacity and be changed beings. They will certainly, I expect, be much happier for it.
Some people put a cloud over their heads, Jeffrey. Probably the wrong thing for them to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And that's why the messages in these near-death experiences are so profoundly optimistic. I mean, who hasn't in their life thought, geez, how could my life be any less meaningful? You know, under a cloud of difficulties of our lives, and I've walked a mile in those shoes, you feel that there can't be any meaningness and purpose for our life, that life is just drudgery until that final permanent departure from this earth. And yet here, over and over by the hundreds, near-death experiencers have a very different message. No, what we're doing here is really important. We're here to learn. We're here living our earthly life as part of eternal beings. What we can learn, the lessons that we can bring back, are really going to be important, not just to us, but to everybody.
Jeffrey, we're going to come back and take stories and questions for you in our final hour, the book, God in the Afterlife, right here on Coast to Coast AM.